He had tried a little footsie to keep his hand in, as it were, but an accidental blow on the ankle from one of Nanny's heavy iron-nailed boots had put a stop to that. And then there had been the gypsy violinist. At first, Nanny had complained about people playing the fiddle while she was trying to concentrate on her eating. But between courses, she'd snatched it off the man, thrown the bow into a bowl of camellias, returned the instrument to something approaching a banjo, and had given Casanunda three rousing verses of what, him being foreign, she chose to call Il porcupino nil sodomi est. Then she'd drunk more wine. What also captivated Casanunda was the way Nanny Ogg's face became a mass of cheerful, horizontal lines when she laughed. And Nanny Ogg laughed a lot. In fact, Casanunda was finding out, through the faint haze of wine, that he was actually having fun.
"I take it there is no Mr. Ogg," he said eventually.
"Oh, yes, there's a Mr. Ogg," said Nanny. "We buried him years ago. Well, we had to.
He was dead. It must be very hard for a woman living all alone."
"Dreadful," said Nanny Ogg, who had never prepared a meal or wielded a duster since her eldest daughter had been old enough to do it for her, and who had at least four meals cooked for her every day by various terrified daughters-in-law.
"It must be especially lonely at night," said Casanunda, out of habit as much as anything else.
"Well, there's Grebo," said Nanny. "He keeps my feet warm."
"Grebo?"
"The cat. I say, do you think there's any pudding?"
Later, she asked for a doggy bottle. Mr. Brooks, the beekeeper, ladled some greenish, foul-smelling liquid out of the saucepan that was always simmering in his secret hut, and filled his squirter. There was a wasp's nest in the garden wall. It'd be a mortuary by morning. That was the thing about bees. They always guarded the entrance to the hive with their lives, if necessary. But wasps were adept at finding the odd chink in the woodwork around the back somewhere, and the sleek little devils would be in and robbing the hive before you knew it. Funny, the bees in the hive had let them do it too. They guarded the entrance, but if a wasp found another way in, they didn't know what to do. He gave the plunger a push. A stream of liquid bubbled out and left a smoking streak on the floor. Wasps looked pretty enough, but if you were for bees, you had to be against wasps. There seemed to be some sort of party going on in the hall. He vaguely remembered getting an invitation to it, but on the whole, that sort of thing never really caught his imagination. And especially now. Things were wrong. None of the hives showed any signs of swarming. Not one. As he passed the hives in the dusk, he heard the humming. You got that on a warm night. Battalions of bees stood at the hive entrance, fanning the air with their wings to keep the brood cool. But there was also the roar of bees circling the hive. They were angry and on guard. There was a series of small weirs just on the borders of Lancre. Granny Weatherwax hauled herself up onto the damp woodwork and squelched to the bank where she emptied her boots. After a while, a pointy wizard's hat drifted downriver and rose to reveal a pointy wizard underneath it. Granny lent a hand to help rid Cully out of the water.
"There," she said. "Bracing, wasn't it? Seemed to me you could do with a cold bath."
Ridcully tried to clean some mud out of his ear. He glared at Granny.
"Why aren't you wet?"
"I am."
"No, you're not. You're just damp. I'm wet through. How can you float down a river and just be damp?"
"I dries out quick."
Granny Weatherwax glared up at the rocks. A short distance away, the steep road ran on to Lancre, but there were other, more private ways known to her among the trees.
"So," she said, more or less to herself, "she wants to stop me going there, does she? Well, we'll see about that."
"Going where?" said Ridcully.
"Ain't sure," said Granny. "All I know is, if she don't want me to go there, that's where I'm going. But I hadn't bargained on you turning up and having a rush of blood to the heart. Come on."
Ridcully wrung out his robe. A lot of the sequins had come off. He removed his hat and unscrewed the point. Headgear picks up morphic vibrations. Quite a lot of trouble had once been caused in Unseen University by a former Arch-Chancellor's hat, which had picked up too many magical vibrations after spending so much time on wizardly heads and had developed a personality of its very own. Ridcully had put a stop to this by having his own hat made to particular specifications by an Ankh-Morpork firm of completely insane hatters. It was not a normal wizard hat. Few wizards have ever made much use of the pointy bit, except maybe to keep the odd pair of socks in it. But Ridcully's hat had small cupboards. It had surprises. It had four telescopic legs.